What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Before we get into this incredible, incredible podcast with the authors of this amazing book, I just wanted to let you guys know we have a brand new product. This is the Everyday No Bad Dog Biothane collar. Comes in our yellow, our orangish red, and our black, small, medium, large. Just want to let you guys know they just dropped literally today. Get them while you can. Link in the description. And enjoy this podcast, guys, with these incredible people, creative and passionate people. Enjoy. So, guys, I have to ask, like, what was the inspiration and how did you think of, oh, I'm going to start a cookbook for a dog? Because as I'm looking for this, guys, this isn't just a normal cookbook. Like, this is, like, I would eat every single thing off this front page of this cookbook. Like, what was the inspiration behind this and how did you guys get started on this whole journey?
It was totally unexpected. When we first got Cedric, I was just going to feed him kibble. And I didn't really want to think too much about it, which is strange because at the time we were both super health conscious ourselves, you know, making sure that we were eating whole foods all the time. Yeah. But I kind of didn't want to really think about cooking for Cedric. I was like, oh no, I don't want to get into this mess. But as soon as he came home, he had tummy issues as a little puppy. His whole litter was on antibiotics. And so he came home and he wasn't doing well in the kibble. He's having diarrhea. He was throwing up. So we made him an egg.
Yeah.
And yeah. He loved the egg. He did really well on the egg. And I was like, I guess we are going to have to start cooking for him.
It was pretty funny. I started cooking for my family dogs about 20 years ago. I also tried lots of stuff, you know, feeding raw. And then making a cooked meal. And so when we got Cedric, I suggested to her, hey, maybe we should try cooking for Cedric. And she was like, absolutely not. No way. I'm not doing that. I was like, okay.
Well, look, because when I was, years back, I'd also tried cooking for my childhood dogs. So we both had kind of tried stuff in the past like that. But it was a huge mess back then. And so I was kind of like, I don't really know if I want to do that again. But we started cooking for Cedric, and it was actually great immediately. I mean, it was fun. We both love to cook, and
the rest is history.
The rest is history. Yeah.
I guess the funny thing is, you know, it's easy for people to suspend disbelief. Like when you go to a movie, you don't think of it as light on a screen. You think of it as like you're actually engulfed in the story. And kind of the same is true for dog foods. People suspend disbelief for some strange reason. And they believe that like this processed food is better than real foods, which is totally nonsensical, but yet most people still believe that to be true, which is just wild. But we also fell into that.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, you know, people who are listening and watching, I think it's also, it's just all they know. It's not even that they're making a decision to say, I want to feed ultra processed food, right? It's almost, this is what we've done forever. I saw my mom, that's why I'm so excited to talk to you guys. So sorry to interrupt. Yeah. I just wanted to like throw that caveat because I think a lot of people get, you know, when I post things about what I feed my dogs, people get offended almost where they're like, oh, well, blah, you know, and it's like, you know, even if you don't want to feed raw or whatever, you guys have, I mean, you started off with an egg. So keep going. Sorry to interrupt, but keep going down this path because I think it's really good to touch on. But I just wanted to say that because what so many people don't realize is just it's the norm. This is what we've done for, I mean, you guys and a bunch of other people that I talk to are trailblazing. I mean, the first of your kind are like, hey, my dog's stomach is getting upset from kibble. I'm going to do an egg, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I started making little meals for him and like pancakes and cute things like that and just sharing that online. And it kind of took off. People really liked seeing it. I mean, some people liked seeing it. Other people were like, oh my God, you know, what are you doing? You're going to kill him.
Killing your dog.
And I was like, oh my gosh, you know? Yeah. So we started looking into, you know, the research of dog nutrition really heavily. We really leaned into fully all the way in. We're just like, you know what, we're gonna do this thing and see what value we can add here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that not only did we not want to hurt our own pets, but if we're gonna have a little platform at the time, we're thinking people are gonna follow what we do or at least try it on their own. So we wanted to make sure that we covered all the research bases to make sure that we weren't gonna harm any dogs. And what came out was actually really, really eye-opening. And I didn't realize at the time, you know, how bad some of these things were. Now that's not to say that all kibble manufacturers and dog food manufacturers are bad, for sure. There's good ones and reputable ones. But what's allowed, what's monitored, it's the Wild West. I mean, even in human supplements, we had this company that we were going to make a large purchase from. We tested their goods and it came back as like totally counterfeit. And this is for human consumption, it's a human supplement. So this happens all the time. Even for people, you can think what the standards are for animals. Wow. But yeah, it's crazy out there.
Can you say what that supplement, you don't have to say the company, but can you go into that? Like what supplement was it? What were you guys acquiring it for? And how was it when you say fraudulent or like, was it just like, if you said, hey, this is vitamin C and you tested it and it was plastic. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, basically, so we built our book on whole foods, naturally available foods. So there's no chemicals. Not that chemicals are bad per se, because some, you know, most things are chemicals. But we wanted to do it from a whole food perspective. And so one of the things that we added was oysters. And so we wanted to make a simple option for people that didn't want to get whole oysters or fresh or frozen. So we started using oyster powder. So we tried to source that globally. And most of the oyster powder that comes to the U.S. originates from China. And again, not to say anything bad about China, we lived there for, you know, a long time, but some of the stuff that gets through can be really low quality. So when we tested this, we found that it was maybe 5% oyster powder.
Wow.
When it's supposed to be 100%. And so we just can't use that.
Right, so it's really like if you got a juice for your kid and it's 90% water and, you know, 10% added sugar. And
it was even worse than that, actually. We had the zinc level tested because oysters are the world's, you know, most nutritious source of zinc. So we got it tested and this thing came back at 13 parts per million zinc, which means you'd have to eat like you know, a pound and a half to get your RDA. And so who's going to eat a pound and a half of this powder? It's like, you know, 1/200th of what would be a normal oyster powder. So we went through this whole thing of like formulating our own, building a supply chain. And so now we have the world's highest quality oyster powder in our products. Mm-hmm. So there was a whole ordeal, but it took us full circle and said, and right. You know, we went directly to the source. Fortunately, we live only a couple hours from the largest oyster fishery in North America. So that helped. But yes, we built a whole supply chain around that and just did it ourselves.
And what are you guys using? Are you selling this to people, or what's the deal with that?
Yeah, it's in our products, and we'll probably offer it for people just for their convenience. Like, we didn't want to make the book around any of our products. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the conceptions of you know, influencers. They try to push a lot of their own stuff, and I think some of our audience might have thought that too. But we made our book product agnostic. Mm-hmm. So everything's available from the grocery store.
Yeah, many of the recipes you can make with just items you find at the grocery store. And then some of them require a couple slightly weirder things, but you can find them easily online. Like, we use sea kelp powder for iodine. That's commonly available online as well.
Yeah, like Amazon, or like where do you?
Amazon.
You can get sea kelp on Amazon. So we've also sourced these things, and we include them in our products, and we'll probably put some of these things up for sale just to make it convenient for people. But these are all readily available things. But the oyster powder is just one example of like how you think you're getting something, but it actually turns out to be something totally different, and it's not even nutritious, unfortunately. So buyer beware out there.
Yeah, that is insane. It's scary because I've heard of that too. Like, there's been many, many tests of multivitamins for humans that mm-hmm. are, yeah. you know, you're buying a multivitamin that you're supposed to take daily, and it doesn't matter as much that it's foreign and it's from another country. It matters of the actual quality of it and the substance of it. And I've heard of that so many times where it's not really what you're buying, unfortunately, because it's cheaper, because you're basically filling it with filler and sell, you know, actually putting in 5% of the actual ingredient that costs them money. Yeah. And that's how they're making tons of money. Right. Yeah. So, I'll just say, like, you know, when you guys are talking about building, I just find your story really captivating to me, because you're just doing this in such an organic way and a very what I like about it is, you know, at some point you have to realize that people are going to be like, you guys wrote literally a book on a cookbook on this stuff. So don't be afraid. I understand the concept behind you didn't want to like backdoor your products in a book, but also understand that when you write a book on something like this and it's done as beautifully as yours, okay. and you've done the research. I know that, again, we've spoke briefly before we went live here. Like, you guys have done your research, and people are going to be looking at you for recommendations, and they are going to say like, hey, this is great, but where do I get sea kelp, and where do I get this source of zinc, and where do I get this? So I would just say, like, for somebody who's been, you know, I don't know exactly how long you guys have been on the road here of kind of creating your own brand and your own.
Yeah. Not that long.
Your own image. But the reality is that happened with me too. So many people were like, where do I get this? Where do I get that? And that's how I just started making my own collars, my own leashes. So there will be a point in your career, I hope, that you guys can see the good in that. But what are your backgrounds with? Okay, the egg started. Your dog had an upset stomach with the kibble, and you started feeding a cooked egg, and your dog loved it. When you say your dog loved it, was your dog like aversive to the kibble, or was your dog eating the kibble and then just having a bad stomach ache, or was your dog really not liking the kibble? And then he loved the egg. So you're like, okay, we're going to do this. Like, how did that happen? Like, is that?
He was eating the kibble. I mean, he was just a little puppy and he was eating it, but he just was not doing well on it. And we were just worried about him getting, you know, the nutrients he needed as a puppy. Yeah. We thought, why don't we feed him an egg?
Yeah, and it was funny at the time. Jewel was so scared of it. She was googling all over the place and saying, "Are you sure that dogs can eat eggs?" And
look, in my, I knew that they could eat eggs, but something about like reading, "Oh, they might get salmonella," you know, online, just makes you.
It works. Like we often say, the fear mongering does work because then people are apprehensive, especially when you have a lot of the experts that are saying similar things, and maybe they don't even understand what the experts are saying. But they just hear fear and we should be careful. And so that does, I think it does a bit of disservice because throughout history, all animals on earth survived and thrived on foods that just grew from the ground. Right? So there's no need for anything to be made by a company that certifies it as this or that. It's nonsensical. So we're trying to get back to basics. So we didn't include any, you know, elaborate, supplement formulations. It's mostly based around whole foods. For vitamin E, we're using roasted unsalted sunflower seeds or wheat germ. For iodine, it's sea kelp. For zinc and copper, it's oysters and oyster powder. So really empowering people to go back to, you know, real food. You asked a bit about our background. So previous to this, we were working, you know, on longevity
for people.
And that's also how I met Dr. Matt Kaeberlein, who was so kind to endorse our book. So he's a leading longevity researcher, one of the top in the business, but he also runs a study for dogs on dog aging. So a lot of the people who cite like things like, you know, one meal a day per dogs, for dogs, that's their research for the Dog Aging Project.
Yeah, we just did a podcast with him, so I'm familiar.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Matt's got serious cred, not just in dogs, but also in human longevity. He's one of the guys that are really rigorous about the science, and he doesn't stretch the truth or embellish his own research at all. So it was really cool that he would even consider reading our book, let alone endorsing it.
So you guys what were you doing in the longevity space for humans? Was it in nutrition or was it just in what was it?
Yeah, we were trying to make it accessible for people.
Yeah.
So we're trying to make things that were tasty and also good for you. Mm-hmm. But what we quickly found out is people either want tasty or they want good for you. Kind of mix it together, make this weird hodgepodge. Yeah.
It's hard to make good for you really tasty.
Yeah. And if it's good for you, it's actually not so tasty. Mm-hmm. So that was a steep learning curve. So that was a huge L. Mm-hmm. And then from those ashes, we started to experiment in pet food. And then before that, I was working on software. And I sold software all over the world. Europe, we were based in between Shanghai and Amsterdam. So flying around.
Yeah.
So I've been doing research and R&D for the better part of 20 years.
Yeah.
Making all sorts of stuff. So I just like to make things. So we built a calculator to formulate all the recipes in the book, because when I went to find one commercially available, of course, I'm going to audit it to make sure it's accurate. And it just came back wildly inaccurate. I was like, I just cannot use this thing. The data sources were not reliable. So I just built my own to take care of it.
Yeah. And that's really important too, because if somebody like you didn't do that research, again, people would just be kind of, you know, it's like a placebo pill, really. It's like, it's not really doing what it should, you know, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. And so you guys did the longevity for people. And then this light bulb kind of came up in your head after you're like, whoa. And then, so where did the social media, 'cause I know social media was a big part. I know you started posting things and people were giving you crap. But hey, welcome to social media. Half the people or more are like, this is awesome. Good stuff. Can't wait to see more. And then you get this smaller percentage, but definitely a percentage that's like, this is the word.
Yeah.
And they're very loud. Yeah. They're like 5% of the population or less, but they make up like 80% of the noise. And what's interesting now is that we've almost built up this antibody. So in the comment section, if someone says something, you know, out of line, like we don't have to say anything. The loyal community comes and says, what are you talking about? This is not true. And like all this that comes out, we don't even have to do anything at all. which is interesting.
I barely notice now. And I think the coolest thing about the social media is just seeing all these people that have already or always been feeding homemade food and just quietly, you know, just always been feeding homemade food to their dogs. And they're coming in the comments and saying, oh, I've always done this. You know, my dog's always been super healthy, lived so long. I've always fed them, you know, stews that I make myself. And I think that's just super cool to see.
Yeah. It's almost, when you guys are telling this story, it's almost going back to, it is going back to basics, but it's going back to principle. It's going back to primal. It's going back to, you know, to your point, you said like dogs for canines for many years, even the wolves and coyotes and fox and all the things that run around there, they do the same thing. They eat fruits and berries and they kill things and they eat things, they eat whole prey. Right. These are all things that animals do on the regular and dogs used to. And there's so many people who used to, and still do. And what you guys have done is you've created this beautiful cookbook, and it's fun. I mean, guys, and I'm just going to break down some of the things that are in here just to give you context for people who are not familiar. You can see, for people who are watching this on YouTube or Spotify, I mean, you can see some of the spreads, like the Thanksgiving spreads. You guys have everything from cocktails to
dogtails, sir. Sir.
Exactly. I was just gonna say everything is broken down in a very cute dog friendly thing. And so going through this, what was your research like? Because again, we talked about just internet trolls, but there are some validity to, hey, you can feed dogs this, you can't feed dogs this. Like, what kind of research and development did you do to make sure that when you were putting stuff out there to the public, especially people paying for the book, like what did that entail? And what were some surprising things that you found? Because I know a couple of things that, you know, people always like, garlic is one of those things. And there's other things out there that dogs can eat and actually is beneficial to them as long as it's not. So go over that process, because I'm sure that was a big part of this.
Yeah, it was.
Not very many things that they really can't have. And the myths are, what's interesting, are often from really poorly conducted science, like the avocados.
Yeah. So the strategy, when you're doing research, for me anyway, is to verify across multiple different studies. If you talk to a lot of researchers today, there's a reproducibility crisis, meaning that a lot of the studies that are conducted previously cannot be reproduced later. So it's something called like p-hacking, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. They build the study and their numbers around making it look good statistically, and then other researchers that come back later can't do it. That's one problem. The second problem is that a lot of researchers are actually really lazy. So what they do is they look at one paper and then they cite the resource that paper cited, but they don't read the actual original resource. So Joel mentioned it earlier. We found one situation where a relatively highly cited paper said that avocados were toxic. And then if you look at the citations, a lot of the citations on avocado being toxic reference that paper. But then if you look at that paper's reference, like what did they reference to substantiate their claim that avocado was toxic? They referenced a study from Kenya in the 90s that was like an anecdotal report of like two dead dogs that showed up at a hospital and they did a postmortem. Like there's no RCT. Mm-hmm. They just had two dead dogs and the owner said, oh, I think, you know, they liked avocados, but they're like malnourished. They're like, you know, emaciated, and they're dead when they showed up.
They couldn't have died from any other reason. Like, yeah.
I have to stop you there, and we have to back up a little bit. Okay. Just to make me clear, what you're saying is there's one, like, let's say a paper from Kenya back in the 90s came out because of two deceased dogs who showed up, and the owner or the whatever said, hey, the dogs liked avocados, maybe they got on the avocados. And then all of the papers and research that comes out years then after is citing that one paper. Therefore, the continued research or the up-to-date research is just citing something that we don't even know is true?
Yeah, basically, there's a paper that was cited like over 100 times by a researcher that cited that Kenya paper. And then most of the researchers are citing this paper that then cited the Kenya paper. So it's called circular references. They didn't check the reference that the paper cited. They just trusted that mistaken reference that the author put in there. And she probably didn't read the paper herself. Because if you did, you'd be like, this is like BS. There's no evidence that this dog even died of avocados. And it turns out that avocados themselves, the flesh, is not toxic at all. It's the skin has some person in it, and also the seeds. And so there's just this myth of what is actually toxic. And I think there's interests by pet food companies to do that, because then you're reliant on them. The more uncertainty there is, well, they provide certainty.
And convenience and safety. And the more people I talk to in the industry that are specialists or have PhDs in something to do with animals or nutrition, the more I realize that the pet food companies do try to scare you into everything is bad, be convenient and feed this, be smart and be safe and feed this. So what are some other, so avocados aren't the worst thing for your dog. What are some other things that you guys found doing your research as you're putting together this cookbook with all these beautiful things in it? What are some other things that you found like that, where you're like, actually that, like the Kenya thing, like are there other things that you found that you kind of debunked?
I think pancreatitis is an interesting one. Would you say that's probably one of the things that gets cited a lot as a big risk?
Yeah.
That say, oh, this food, human food, is going to cause pancreatitis. And there's a lot of fear around it. And unfortunately, pancreatitis is extremely hard to diagnose. If you look at the literature, and I've probably looked at like 500 papers or 1,000 papers on pancreatitis, it's extremely difficult to diagnose because the test that tests for pancreatic lipase, you know, so many ailments, like even, you know, gastro, just an upset stomach will raise your pancreatic lipase. So there's a false positive rate of up to 40% for that test. And so if you get a false positive rate of 40%, that means like almost half are false, right? And then so when you're doing that, then you're like, okay, so this is pancreatitis, but you don't really know. Another study showed that something like 34% of dogs had subclinical pancreatitis, meaning they had the disease, but then didn't show symptoms. So if that's true, then your dog actually gets sick with like some gastro thing and you go in and you go, well, he has pancreatitis, but it could be something completely different. And then if you look at another study, a retrospective study, which is weaker than RCTs, it showed that the highest correlated dietary event to pancreatitis was actually eating out of the trash, like eating foreign bodies and foreign substances. But vets use that all the time as evidence to say, hey, you should not feed your pet any real food because it gives them pancreatitis. Mm-hmm. But there's no evidence to suggest that that's true in the scientific literature, unfortunately.
And that works because, I mean, nobody wants to hurt their pet, right? So your vet is saying, like, you are going to hurt them if you feed them any human food. Like, I'm not going to take that risk. Like, why would I do that?
Why would you do that? Yeah. Why would you take any risk if you don't have to, right?
Yeah.
But so that's the thing, is they put risk where there's not. Another interesting one is onion. So onion is mildly toxic. I mean, that's why, you know, you don't typically like to eat raw onions. And then for dogs, they won't eat raw onions. But once you cook it, a lot of the poisonous substances, they actually, I think they're called thiosulfates, they actually have a pretty low boiling temperature. So there's one study where they fed like supposedly a toxic level of cooked onions, and the dogs were just fine. They had a little bit of anemia.
Yeah.
They call it hemolytic anemia,
yeah.
But they weren't like dropping dead. None of the dogs on the study died.
Yeah.
So it is toxic, but it's not as toxic as they would lead you to believe.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, part of it is just, like you said, Joel, dog owners just, they, you know, like if an onion falls on the floor, it's like, you know, it's like fire, you know.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do that.
That's how it is in my house. It's like, you know, especially when you have kids, because my kids like to eat. And I'll ask you this about grapes and raisins, and maybe you've done research on it, maybe you haven't, but you know, I've always known as, and again, like that's why I love this podcast. I get to talk to people like you, because this is, you can talk to me all day about behavior, but when it comes to other things, I'm just a dog lover, you know, but my whole life has been grapes and raisins are, you know, really bad and toxic, and they may be, but it's the same thing when I have a 3-year-old human and a 1-year-old human, both boys. And, you know, we're always conscious about what we give them because of course the dogs are sitting under their chair because they know that they're going to get something. So have you done any research on those types of things, like the grapes and the raisins?
Yeah, we have done a bit of research on grapes and raisins. It's not clear in the literature what is actually poisonous about grapes and raisins. So they don't really know the substance that actually causing illness. But there are documented cases of dogs consuming raisins and grapes and then dying. Yeah. Is it super prevalent? You know, it's not. But there's some kind of wild card because we don't know actually what it is. So it seems like some dogs are particularly sensitive and then other dogs are not. So that one you probably want to err on the side of caution because we don't know, right?
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, for listeners and viewers, I'm definitely not insisting we challenge the years of research. I'm just saying you'd be surprised. Same thing with like chocolate. Chocolate is one of those things. I was talking to somebody and they were saying that, you know, because again, it's one of those things like a Hershey Kiss falls on the floor, your dog eats it, and that's it. You might as well throw a funeral now. And it's like, actually, they need to eat like specific baker's chocolate that's like 99% cacao, and they have to eat a lot of it in order for it to harm them. Is that right?
It depends again on the type, but like who really likes to eat 95% baker's chocolate, right? Yeah. So it would take something like, you know, a human eating like 5 or 6 bars. I forgot the math off the top of my head. I wrote a post on it, but it's a really big amount of dark chocolate. And white chocolate has none of the I think it's called theobromide, but I have to double check.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. White chocolate doesn't have it at all. Milk chocolate has a little bit, and the dark chocolate has the most. So it'd be something like 5 or 8 chocolate bars for a small dog. One or two dark chocolate bars would put him at risk. But again, it's a lot. Like imagine a little dog eating a whole dark chocolate bar.
Yeah.
That'd be like us eating like 10, right? Yeah. 10, right?
Yeah, that would be insane. So what other kind of research have you done as far as what are some other surprising things that you guys found during your research? Going through like, oh, did you know that this was beneficial and people thought it wasn't? Like, is there fermented foods that's been like, because I know a lot of fermented food for humans, like kimchi and things like that is really, really good for us. Are there other things that you found down your road of research that you were surprised about how not only was okay for dogs, but was beneficial?
Yeah, I think one thing that we call for in the book a lot is fish. And that's one thing I think that dogs that are eating dog food or kibble are not getting is omega-3s. And AFCO, that regulates the dog food in America, doesn't call for any amount of omega-3s. So we made sure to put a lot of sardines and salmon and seafood in our recipes.
Yeah, what's interesting about omega-3s is that there appears to be a ratio in the diet that really matters a lot. Mm. It's still really early research. So even on humans, we don't have definitive evidence. But it looks like the lower the ratio, the better. So that's the ratio of omega 6 to omega 3. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people get like, you know, 20-1 these days or even higher because seed oils are everywhere. And it's not that seed oils are like, so evil. It's just the amount. They even, you know, make it into animal feeds. So we have a huge amount of these seed oils that are high in omega-6. And so that skews the ratio a lot. So to bring it back, one of the best things you can do is actually eat, you know, take fish oils or eat lots of fish. So we do that for ourselves and we also do it for the dogs. I mean, it forms the foundation of a lot of the cell membranes. Like the most abundant fat in the brain is DHA, which is a omega-3 fatty acid. And then one more interesting thing about that is the vegan version or the vegetable version does not convert well in either humans or dogs because of the seed oils. They use the same pathway to convert, to go down the chain. So yeah, it's one of those things. Fish oils and omega-3s are super important, especially the ones from, you know, marine algae and fish and seafood.
Where can you get, because that's a question I was going to ask you guys, and I'm glad this came up. Where can you get, I was going to go online the other day, but I was like, I'm going to wait to talk to you guys. And it's okay if you don't know or if you don't have any recommendations, but where's a good place to get fish oil for dogs? Because it's in, you know, it's like you said, here's the problem with educating yourself on things. The more I know, the more I don't trust, like, and especially with food, mainly with food is what I'm talking about. Like the more I know, like the more I'm so suspicious. To your point, like earlier we were talking, I don't know if we recorded or not, but earlier we were talking about like, oh yeah, we did. Whereas like the delicious stuff is typically not as good for you, you know? And so it's like hard to find that balance, but where can somebody get a good source of omega-3 or fish oil for their dogs or even themselves?
You're making a great point here,
which is about verifying.
And it's not just for dogs,
it's for people.
Like recently they've come out and said that
there's some kind of
toxin
in
sheep
creatine
that can cause cancer.
And a lot of the multivitamins are contaminated with heavy metals and things that you don't want in your body.
So the only way to really avoid that is to verify. So there's sites online that specifically do tests and publish them. Because you're right, if you get a rancid fish oil,
one that's oxidized, like iron turns rusty and turns unusable.
The same is true for fish oils, it could actually be worse for your health than not taking them at all.
So the suggestion that I would have is to go online and look for third party validated batches, and they do lot numbers, you can verify the test results.
So one brand that I like a lot that previously did some good research on is Sports Research. So use that one.
And that's for people. We just give the same brand to the dogs.
Can you say that again? Sports Research?
Yeah, that's the one that I currently take. I haven't updated the research in a while, so I should probably do that. But the last time I checked them out, the third party sites that rated them very highly in terms of like oxidation levels and quality. One way to look at it is to make sure that the ratios of omega-3s to oils is high. So if you have a big capsule and it has like 250 milligrams, it's probably not very high quality.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, and one thing I can tell my listeners is consistently everybody that I talk to that's in the nutrition or dog nutrition space at all has said add fish oil. Every single person that I've talked to, some people agree and disagree on a bunch of other things. But one thing that everybody always says is dogs need more fish oil. And so sports research.
Yeah. We just poke a hole in the capsule and squeeze it in. But it's not just dogs. It's absolutely people too. Yeah. And the reason why is because it forms such a critical component of our brains and nervous systems. And imagine if you don't have something that's critical, what do you do if you're building a house and you run out of bricks? You use something else, but that probably doesn't work as well. So then you have a shoddy structure.
Yeah. And the other thing is you can feel the difference. Like I remember, you know, my wife, when she was breastfeeding, wasn't supplementing correctly. She felt, as she should, you know, just she felt drained and tired all the time. And she started supplementing and she immediately felt better. And same thing for me. I started to take like liposomal D and C and B and some other things in just a different form. And it just changed the way that my body operates. It's like putting bad gas in a system and your car is just like sputtering along. And people don't realize that. And that's why I think it's just so, you know, fascinating and helpful for people like you, you know, to talk about the dog stuff. And so, okay, I want to ask you this, because you mentioned there aren't many. I asked this before, but I don't know if we answered it. You mentioned that there aren't many things that are actually toxic for dogs. Can you list? Do you have it in your book?
Yeah.
Like a list?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what page? page it's on?
There's an index in the back.
Or if you know it off the top of your head, that would be cool. Because yeah, it would be cool if you could go over those things too, because like I said, I think you guys are, I know you guys are breaking down barriers that, I mean, that people just don't think about, and it's going to better so many dogs' lives. Cause this isn't just a cookbook for people to make. It is a cookbook to find, make cool things for their dog, but it's also, you guys are talking about, hygiene and, their gums, their teeth, oils, carbohydrates, all that stuff. So, what are the things that are toxic to dogs for sure that we know of that like they could get a hold of every day?
21, if you want to have a look, we do put onions on there, xylitol, which is a sweetener that's in a lot of products like toothpaste, peanut butter sometimes. Yes, yeah. Bubblegum, macadamia nuts, grapes and raisins is on there, chocolate. And then we also have, we've actually listed the toxic dose and then also the lethal dose on there as well.
Right, what's interesting about toxicity is that like even water is toxic. Mm-hmm. Like there's been documented cases of people dying from drinking too much water because it pulls the salts out of your body and can cause death. So if water can cause death, then most things can, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the dose, I guess they say the dose makes the poison, and that's kind of true because it takes some context, but some are really high and then some are really low, right? Mm-hmm. I think vitamin D is an example of something that happens a lot. A lot of recalls for pet foods have been because they put a little bit too much vitamin D in there, mm-hmm. and that can kill dogs, right? So even an essential nutrient is also a toxin at the same time. But some of these things, like macadamia nuts, you know, they're listed as toxic, but there's so much we don't know about it. Like, we don't know exactly what is toxic about it. And there's not even a very clearly defined lethal dose of that one. But we didn't want to include that just to make sure that people knew that, you know, that we'd covered it. Mm-hmm. And then some things that, you know, might be in the house are like ethanol, mm-hmm. The alcohol that people drink, which is also toxic to humans, by the way.
Yeah.
and then another one that's surprising is minoxidil, which is often used to treat male pattern baldness. Yeah. That's also super toxic to dogs.
Yeah, to all pets, I think. I think it's pretty toxic.
It's pretty toxic in general. So if you do use minoxidil, which is like Rogaine, do be mindful.
That's not.
But that's not on there. Yeah. That's not a food.
That's not a food. Yeah, the last one is caffeine.
Yep, and everyone has caffeine laying around. Coffee.
Yeah.
Sugar.
It's just about being mindful about things. And then also, of course, like don't feed your dog like, you know, cooked chicken bones, which can be dangerous. Or really anything that you wouldn't eat yourself.
Yeah, like we were saying, like for avocados, you know, the skins and pits are really toxic. But you wouldn't eat those yourself anyway, you know. So right. The things that you're not going to be eating yourself, like, why would you throw those to your dog to eat?
Yeah. And one thing that I'm reading right now on 24 is what you guys give for your healthy fats. So healthy fats is obviously very important for many reasons for humans, but you guys do coconut oil, olive oil, beef tallow, and clarified butter, grass-fed butters, etc. And it's so funny, you know, like you guys have grass-fed butters in here, and it's butter is not your enemy. It's not your dog's enemy either. But if you get like a really cheap butter, then it could be everyone's enemy, right? And we learned that too, from our naturopath doctor, where he's like, no, butter is not bad. You just have to get good butter. You have to get like a grass-fed butter that isn't filled with all these different things and mostly milk. And so it's just so relatable to humans. But like people who are listening right now, what are some things that you could recommend for dog owners? You guys have done so much research in nutrition, and you've done so much research in what's valuable and what's helpful, obviously, and what's delicious, because dogs aren't really that picky. Like I said, my dogs, if they had an opportunity, would eat the dead rabbit over here if given the opportunity, and then roll in it. So like, what are some things that people are listening to right now from your experience that they can, like, I love that you have sardines in here, because sardines are like something that my kids eat all the time because it's really nutrient rich. So what are some things people can do right now, like, that are listening to immediately start adding into your dog's diet and just start playing around with these safe things that can help boost their energy, potentially boost their longevity, boost their nutrition levels, and just feel better?
Yeah, I think you mentioned a lot of them already.
Yeah.
Like a can of sardines is a great way to start. And we're not here to shame anybody for feeding kibble, because, you know, we have family members, obviously, that feed their dogs kibble.
Yeah, I think if you're having a healthy snack yourself, you're having some berries, you're having a little bit of cheese, like, you can share some with your dog, and it's good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even ground beef, eggs.
Really quick, the sardines, because when I go grocery shopping for my kids, the sardines, there are so many different types now. There's in olive oil, there's no salt added, there's chili.
Yeah,
so obviously, yeah. can you clarify, like, if somebody, because here's what I'm thinking, guys, is when I listen to a podcast and there's somebody, you guys have done, you listen, I trust you, you've done your research, you literally wrote the book on it. When somebody says, go out and get sardines and blueberries and stuff and put it in your dog's food and see what happens, because they may like it, and also it could be beneficial to them. Are we looking at just plain sardines in water, or what are we looking at?
Yeah, that's what we recommend, just plain sardines in water.
Okay. Because sometimes they add salt and stuff, so I wasn't sure. Because I get the tuna, I get like the line-caught tuna with no salt added, because tuna is like a whole...
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole topic of discussion, because you could get really awful tuna for you, and then you could get more sustainable and but anyway, okay, cool. So just plain sardines, nothing added into
peppers.
And you know what's interesting about it, though, is we're much more lax than it might seem.
Yeah.
So like, if we can't find like sardines in water, we might even just like get them in oil and pat them off and then rinse them off to make sure that, you know, that the dogs can eat them. It's not so rigid. I mean, it can be for dogs that have been on kibble for their entire lives, because they may not have the enzymes to digest a lot of these novel foods. Like, if you're eating, you know, kibble and it's 40% carbohydrate, your system is going to be optimized to digest that. So then you might not have the lipase, which is the enzyme that digests fats. You might not have that, and then it can cause more problems because you don't have that. But we're talking about healthy dogs that have a varied diet. There's not a lot that they can't eat, actually. Like we said earlier.
Yeah,
like we said earlier.
Going back to the bone discussion, because that's one thing, you know, I feed my dogs raw, have for a while. And I'm a big fan of really whatever you can do. You know, I'd just be mindful of the processing, right? So, because that's a big thing that we talk about, right? Is like the highly processed food doesn't matter. You know, if you're getting a good balanced meal and it's cooked, it's still 1,000 times better than highly processed compacted down kibble. And so, you talked about bones, and one of the things that I talk about sometimes, I give my dogs, you know, chicken necks or turkey necks or bones.
Yeah.
And I always have to stop myself and say, but just understand that they're not cooked, because I know it could
be raw, right?
Yeah. They're raw bones that aren't cooked, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but as you cook, poultry specifically, I'm not sure about, other animals like beef, and elk and bison and stuff. But I know if you cook poultry, their bones tend to splinter right?
Especially the leg bones, I think. And again, most dogs are pretty good at it, and they could probably eat it, but why take the risk, you know? Because if it's sharp and it breaks and there's a little point, it can get in their throats, especially if they're eating really fast, right? But they also got, you know, senses themselves. You know, they can chew slowly and chew in the right direction. But, you know, if you want to be optimal and be careful, it's probably best. Especially, again, if your dog's used to eating kibble and doesn't know what to do with the bone.
Yeah, you almost have to, they're looking at, like, yeah, a lot of times when you feed a dog who's never had a bone, they're like,
what is this?
Yeah. What is this?
Yeah.
So food. What is the big benefit of the oyster powder and the kelp powder? Because it's, I know that it's in your book and we talked about it earlier. That's something I'm not familiar with. I haven't heard of. What are the nutritional benefits for dogs for those two types of powders?
Yeah, so kelp is our source of iodine, because iodine is relatively hard to get for terrestrial food sources. And so that's why it's added to our salt. Mm-hmm. And then for dogs, because we don't give them iodized salt, we use sea kelp because it's a natural source of it. And you know what's interesting about salt is dogs actually can take a lot of salt. They've done studies where they fed dogs like copious amounts of salt, and they actually have a very good renal system to pass it. But it can shock their system in the short term because they don't sweat. They don't eat as much as we do. So you technically could feed them iodized salt if you didn't have another source. Mm-hmm. And then the oyster powder, like we were saying earlier, oyster is the highest
in zinc,
the highest food source of zinc in the world.
Yeah.
It also has copper. It's just like taking the ocean, putting it in your mouth.
Yeah.
Do you guys do because on the front of your book, it looks like you have oysters or...
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Muscles.
Shell doesn't look like clams.
Yeah, muscles.
Muscles. Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what I'm...
Yeah, I think we're sending you some oyster powder too, right?
Yeah, right? We are.
So you'll get some of this oyster. This is it's the highest quality oyster powder in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. People can also just use fresh oysters.
Or frozen oysters.
Frozen or canned oysters. They also sell oysters in water. So, and there's actually a conversion chart for those ingredients in the front as well, just to make it as accessible as possible. Like, you don't need the specialty ingredients. You know?
You don't need to buy it from anyone, and certainly not us, but you don't need to do that. You can get everything at the grocery store.
Yep. Yep. And that's really cool. Cause those are things like, you know, it's just been life changing. You know, I always want to better my dog's life. Like, I've spent my whole life bettering their mental health and helping them overcome anxiety and fear and aggression and overstimulation. And so the other half of that is obviously nutrition. You know, it's the same thing that human doctors are now starting to do. When you go into places and you're physically sick, they also look at your mental, they look at your exercise, they look at your nutrition, your vitamins, like your lack thereof. And it's becoming such a balanced approach, which is, I think, really healthy overall for the world. But dogs are stuck in the past. Do you have any, and it's interesting because as we continue to talk about this, it's like they're stuck in the But they're only stuck in the very distant past, because if we actually go back to the past, they're not. Yeah. This is what they actually used to eat. They used to eat fish on the beach, and they would kill things in the woods, and they would eat berries and mushrooms and whatever. So, do you have any history about like how the food industry, the kibble industry had kind of exploded? I've talked to a couple people about this, and from my understanding, it really kind of started during the wars and getting the dogs their food and canned foods. Like, did you do any research on how the highly processed food started?
Yeah, a little bit. We poked around. Kibble is made via extrusion, which is the way they used to make like sausages. It's basically just pushing food out of a bag. And the only way to do that effectively at scale is if everything is made into powders. So it's all powdered meat powder, powdered grains. And another thing they do is they put like lots of grains in there. So then each individual one is less. So it's not at the front of the ingredient list. And then they may have like chicken as an number one ingredient, which they might weigh wet. But ultimately, it still comes out to be about 40 plus percent carbohydrate, mm-hmm. which is way out of whack for what a dog needs. And yeah, you're right. It started with the industrialization process of making food. And that was about 100 years ago. So before that, there's no dog food. Dogs just ate whatever their humans fed them.
Yeah, and I've talked to a couple different veterinarians on, especially oncology veterinarians, specialists in cancers, and they're saying that this is kind of correlating, like the amount, the dogs who are on the highly processed food. And to be clear with everybody listening, not all processed kibble is treated the same. So again, we're just trying to educate people, because at first when people told me about certain, either exercises or meditation or even the things that I do that have helped me tremendously in my life, it was blasphemy. I was like, I didn't want to hear it, of course. But now that I'm like, whoa, I've kind of opened my eyes and I can't unsee it. And so I'm just trying my hardest for people out there because I care about dogs so much, and I'd hate for people to feel like they have to do a certain thing just because they don't know. And that's what this conversation is about. And any other conversation I have in my podcast is I am just passionate about getting to the bottom of what is going to be best for our dogs, period. So 100 years ago, they started this process. And from my research and from talking to other people, Dr. Billinghurst and other people in the food industry for dogs, it seems like it's mostly carbohydrates, or 40, like you said, 40%, almost half. And then that turns into sugar, and then it causes inflammation, and then it causes potential cancers. And so going back to what you were saying, it started 100 years ago-ish, and now when kibble is made, it's all, are you saying it's all powder, and then it's extruded into like a, I don't know. What happens after the powder? They wet it and then they put it through.
Yeah, they put a little bit of water in there so it can mix, and then they push it out of basically a bag or some kind of tube, and then it just gets cut one after another. So they have a dye that's at the end of this tube, and then it just pushes it out cut. But yeah, so the fact that they have to do it that way means that it has to be a lot of carbohydrate, and it can't be the optimal ratio of macronutrients
right.
being
it's
fats.
It's the optimal ratio for the machines.
It's the optimal ratio for the machines, not the optimal ratio for dog nutrition, unfortunately. And so, for production. And it can get really perverse. Like based on the regulations of AFCO, you can make dog food 70% carbohydrates and legally still pass muster. So that's way out of whack to be 70% carbohydrate.
Could you explain that to a meal for us humans? Like what would a 70% carbohydrate meal be for
me?
Yeah,
I wouldn't even know off the top of my head, but yeah, it would be like a lot of rice, a little bit of meat, and a little sprinkle of
powders.
Powders,
supplemental
a little sprinkle
powders.
Of oil on top.
Yeah.
So you're eating 70. And you know what's interesting is because fat is more calorically dense, it's about double carbohydrates and protein. So it would just take up a little bit of portion of the plate, and you're going to be eating mostly rice, a little bit of meat, a drop of oil, and then powders. That would be what it would be like for a person.
And a lot of this is also highly processed too, so it's cooked down, right? It's not like a fresh meal. It's highly processed in a way of what we're talking about. It's broken into powders, put through an extruder, but it's also highly
multiple times. You have to heat it when you process it for making powders, right? And the powder process is also usually at high temperatures. And then the extrusion process is at high pressure and high temperature. So a lot of the stuff, the natural vitamins get destroyed, and they have to add it back in as powders afterwards. Again, that's not to say that powders and synthetics are bad. Just everything that you add increases your risk of contamination, right?
Right. And it's also just, something to think about too for people who are listening and watching is, think about also like it, for me, listen, I used to be that dog owner. I used to feed kibble. I used to feed this company called Gravy Train. Let me tell you what. You put the gravy train in that bowl. You add a little bit of water. You froth it around like you're tossing some chicken wings. And that thing would just turn into a soup. And my dog would love it, right? And so there's things like that they have to eat every day too. So that's something to consider. It's not like if your dog eats kibble, you know, a couple times or whatever, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's just the fact that when your dog is eating carbohydrates for every meal. So to your point, it would be like me eating, or anybody else listening, eating rice and a little bit of meat every day without any other things, like without the fruits and the vegetables. And again, not all kibble is created equal. So take this with a grain of salt, but you can flip your bag over right now. People who are listening, again, don't feel bad. Don't feel like you're doing something wrong. My job is to just help people along the way, educate, flip your bag over. Do you guys have any, processes, or do you have any advice for people when they're looking at their kibble bag? Let's say they say, hey, I can't do this and I can't do that. Do you have any, like, okay, if you are going to feed kibble, or if you're feeding kibble right now and you want to see what's in your dog's food, is there anything that you guys would recommend, like flipping that bag over and seeing the first two ingredients? And as long as it doesn't say cornmeal, you're in better shape.
Yeah.
I don't think we necessarily have a process for that, because we just don't, I mean, we just recommend that, you know, get in your kitchen, you know, open the fridge, see what you got in there, throw it on the stove and give that to your dog. That is really what we'd always say, I think.
Yeah, and part of the reason why is even the guaranteed analysis that they put on dog foods is very misleading, because it's all done based on crude measurements. So if you look at the back of the bag, it says crude protein, crude fat. Unfortunately, like when you use... Yeah, exactly. I was like, what does that mean? And so I didn't know either. And I was looking it up, and it's exactly that. It's crude. So what they do is they take... the nitrogen, and they use that to estimate the amount of protein in a food. Okay, but a lot of other things that aren't protein have nitrogen, like urea, the main excrement in urine, has a lot of nitrogen, right? And then what was the thing that they were putting in baby formula for a while?
I can't remember.
There's an additive that also has lots of nitrogen, but doesn't have any protein. So these things can be misleading. So protein quality is important. So really it's super difficult to understand what's in the bag just by looking at the things that are on there.
And then the wet weight, dry weight can also be confusing.
Yeah. Some things are measured wet and then they measure other things dry.
So just because chicken is first doesn't necessarily mean that it's mostly chicken. On the ingredients in that, it's mostly chicken.
Oh, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. I thought like the first ingredient has the most. That's what the most of the bag is. That's what when I was feeding kibble, that's what I would do, is I would flip the bag over and just make sure it said like chicken. Or
yeah, that's one of the tricks they use now, is that they weigh, if it says just chicken first, and then the next ingredient is like rice, they weigh the chicken wet and they weigh the rice dry. If the first ingredient is dirty.
Well,
you know what?
That's a dirty game.
AFCO allows that to happen. So the regulatory body is okay with that. So it tells you something about where their interests lie. But yeah, so if the first... AFCO again? Oh, American Association of Feed Control Officials. Wow, that was a mouthful. Thank you.
You got it. Okay, just for people who are hearing AFCO, because they probably heard it on my podcast.
So just also to clarify, AFCO is a body made up of, it's non-governmental, but it's made up of officials that are potentially employed by the government. And they get together and they have these meetings and they decide things. But what people don't know is that like all the pet food companies also sit in these things. So it's a collaborative process.
Oh, it's so dirty.
Process. It's been set up. they work together.
See, it happens with, this is the thing. It happens with, this is why it's frustrating as a human, because it happens with us too, because there's been so, like, a lot of like the Ivy League schools, not a lot, but some of them have been caught doing things like this where they would say, I can't cite them all off the top of my head, but I can tell you that like Harvard University was caught up in a scam where they were getting paid by a certain board to say this is bad when it backdoored a particular company, which essentially means that the people who are on this board of AFCO that says what is good, what is bad, what is okay, what is not, are also also the people who are on board are the people who are feeding your dogs this stuff. Which I'm not going to say it's all. This is just me talking, but I don't think it's all malicious and it's all bad. I mean, if the people who are heavily in making dog food, they should have something to say about what's good and what's bad. But sure. At the end of the day, if they're also saying that it's okay for us to say that we're going to tell people that the majority of this bag is chicken when in fact it's only true because it's weighed wet before we powder it all up and then it ends up being actually mostly carbohydrates. Like these are, and then they go, oh no, this is okay, but it's okay because we own the company and so we get paid by this. So pharmaceutical drugs, I mean, this is historic for pharmaceutical drugs in the United States as well, to say like, hey, this is okay for you because we've paid this many people off. And so it's just kind of a dirty game that this happens a little bit in the dog training world, where you'll have a group or a body, an organization, come out with a piece of paper that says this is the proper way to train a dog. And also after you read all of this, and most of it is in-house surveys, not peer-reviewed, not real science and not real studied. And then at the end of it, it's like, and also if you want to apply for our certification program, here's the link. And it's like, that's a little biased, you know? And of course, dog owners, to the point that we've been talking about this whole podcast, the poor dog owners who see this post on Facebook that says, never feed your dog sardines because of this. And they're like,
right,
okay, we can never do this again. Or never use this particular collar because this one thing happened. And it's, we just have to understand that these could also be funded by the same people who don't make this collar or don't make sardines, who want you to buy this bag of dog food, or who want you to buy, you know, their certification program or whatever. And it just happens so much under our noses that we don't even realize it, because we're supposed to. I think growing up, we're all around the same age growing up, we just trusted what everyone said. And now I think people like you are coming along and saying like, hey, actually, hold on, I've done the research and I've backtracked all the things. And just like the little micro find of the Kenya and the avocados, that's the same thing that's happening in many different avenues of our society, where, you know, this study comes out that says avocados are bad for dogs, and you go, so nobody can feed avocado for dogs and it's not healthy fat. And then all of a sudden you find that the actual study and research comes from a person who found two dogs deceased that could have eaten avocados in Kenya in the 90s. And it's the same thing that happens in the dog training industry, where somebody comes in and puts a certain collar on a dog that has zero context for what this is, and then all of a sudden does this really crappy thing to the dog, and then it's like, we can never use this. And it's like, wait a minute, this isn't making any sense. This isn't, like, you know, really, really looked at, and it's not. So it's just, I don't know, my little rant there, that it's so frustrating because dog owners are so confused about, you know.
And it's kind of a trend in the world today where special interest groups have a lot of power, and then consumers are kind of at their, you know, at their whim. And so the only way to really combat that is to be super knowledgeable, or find someone who is, and then trust their judgment. But ultimately, you know, you have to read the research yourself, understand what people are saying. Because the reality is, you know, vets, doctors, any professional, there's good and there's bad. There's going to be good doctors. There's going to be doctors that, you know, graduated med school and then didn't pick up a book or do any research thereafter. And the tough part is distinguishing which ones are which. And the tough part is distinguishing which ones are which.
Yeah. And that's why I'm like I said, I'm excited to have you guys on. I want to read one of these recipes because this is really cool. So you guys have these egg noodles, right? So I want to just picked, guys, random. We have chicken pop thai. We have spup. I don't even know what spup is. It's supposed to be spam, maybe? Okay, cool. We have pop potato gratin pie. We have bad belly soup. We have broths. You guys have done such an incredible job at this. So I just want to go over egg noodles just because it's simple and it looks awesome and it looks like, you know, just like how I would eat egg noodles. I just want to read the recipe and I want to read the way to cook it for people so people can get a good idea of like how this book is laid out and give people a little idea. So egg noodles. These egg noodles are a low carb replacement for regular noodles. We think your pup will love them and even more because of how nutrient dense eggs are comparable to starchy noodles. So it seems like a lot of the ingredients and a lot of the recipes that you guys have compiled and put together also aren't just for fun and for good taste. They're beneficial. Is that fair to say? Like every recipe is built off of some sort of...
Yeah, definitely. Well, we wanted to show people, I think a lot of the dishes that look like human dishes and the fun names is that dog food doesn't have to be disgusting or gross. It can be delicious looking and smelling, and you can make it in a way that's similar to your meals. But we also wanted to make sure that it was still optimal for them, right? So instead of, you know, just making regular noodles for them, a better option would be to make egg noodles for them.
Yeah, I want to read this. Okay, so 2 eggs, half a tablespoon of coconut oil, or 7 grams. So method 1, whisk the eggs in a small bowl, heat up a large pan over medium heat, add the coconut oil and gently heat up. Pour in the eggs, tilt the pan around. So it's kind of like a crepe. You're kind of putting the noodles all the way around the crepe like you would make an omelet, right? Let the eggs cook like one big pancake. When the eggs have mostly firmed up, flip the eggs over, cook for another few seconds on the other side, and transfer the eggs into a cutting board, roll it up, and then cross wire into noodle strains. Let the egg noodles cool completely before serving to your dog. And this makes a beautiful little thing. And I'm looking at this cookbook here for those of you who obviously can't see this. It's just like a pile of delicious looking egg noodles. And this is just one.
120
So over, okay, let's just say over 100. Okay, that's over, a lot, yeah. Right? And then we have meatloaf. We have pachos, which are nachos. It's so cool. And again, like these are nachos that I could eat as a human. I would eat them even if you say I can't because I look good. but a lot of this stuff, guys, is just getting back to the basics. And that's what I love about this cookbook is it's again, I'm just going to read this other quick recipe, right? So we have loaded pachos, which again is a play on loaded nachos. 1 small sweet potato, olive oil, turkey, frozen peas, salmon chopped into bite pieces, fresh chicken liver, roasted unsalted sunflower seeds, oyster powder, ground eggshell, sea kelp, and plain yogurt or kefir. I mean, it's really just getting back to the basics. It's getting back to fuel, right? It's actual food that our dogs are not only going to love, they're going to thrive on. Because if you can pair what I just explained to you guys to the kibble that they get, it's going to be night and day. And here's something, and this isn't a yes or no question, and this may be difficult for you guys to answer, but I know a lot of people are going to say, and I would say this too, you know, I have 2 kids, I have 3 animals in my house. I'd say, well, I don't have time to make even my own family this delicious stuff. Let's just say outside of the cookbook, outside of the pachos and the Japanese dog curry and all that stuff. Like, what would you say, like a balanced, like, could you just give me like, hey, go to the store, get these simple things for inexpensive prices and feed your dogs and it's gonna be better than kibble? Or is there anything that comes to mind that people can do easily and simply, like today?
Devoted the first half or the first Yeah, we third, maybe. Devoted the, of the book to super simple recipes that are 5 ingredients or less that you can just use to get started. So I think the important thing with any habit change is to just get started.
Yeah.
So I think James Clear wrote in his book, The Atomic Habits, that he helped somebody lose a ton of weight. And the goal was to just go to the gym for, I think, like 2 minutes. So go get that habit formed. Go for 2 minutes. And the next day, maybe go for 3, just so it's not like a struggle. And then build upon that muscle. And the same is true for feeding your dogs real food. Start with an egg. Mm-hmm. Give them an egg, because eggs are super nutrient dense. They got almost everything, you know, a living creature needs to thrive. Ground beef is also great, right? So these foods can be fed like immediately. You can put it on top of your kibble. You can feed it alone as a treat. There's just, you know, so many things you could do. You take some kefir or some yogurt, mm-hmm. you know, give it to your dog. Start small.
Right. Make them a recipe once a week, you know, just start incrementally adding fresh food to their, diet.
Yeah. And also I'll just say, you know, from a lot of what I'm seeing and a lot of what we talked about, like everything that we're pretty much, well, hopefully everything that we're eating at home, you know, if we're not doing takeout every night, right? And we do takeout every now and then, you know, we do our pizzas and things like that. But, you know, hopefully you're trying to make home cooked meals for you and your family to kind of, you know, feel and eat well. But a lot of the things from what you've told me and looking through your book, like, you know, the other night we had butternut squash and we had leftovers. Like those are things that you can, my mastiff is a little picky, but my shepherd, she eats like one of her favorite things is broccoli. One of her other favorite things. Cool. Yeah. She loves tomatoes. She loves butter. She loves like squashes. So anything that, you know, so just think about this, guys, even if you're feeding kibble and you go, what, Tom, kibble is easy. It's inexpensive. That's totally fine. But things that you can add to help are things that you're eating at home. Like if you have extra broccoli or if you have extra, you know, if you're making spaghetti, maybe before you mix in the onions and all that, well, you don't have to now that I know, but maybe before you mix in all the sauce and stuff, just take off a little bit of the ground meat, that whatever meat you're using, whether it's turkey or bison or beef. But a lot of this stuff that I'm seeing in here, the chicken and the olive oils and the vegetables and the fruit, you can add, just put it right onto the kibble and your dog will find that nutrient dense, right? I mean, even the eggshells from the egg, a lot of dogs won't eat them because, again, they're not used to eating raw things or eggshells in general. Because if you see, like, I think what becomes overwhelming for dog owners is they're flipping through social media and they see, I don't know if you guys have ever seen like the raw feeding pages, but even for me, I'm like, what? It's like
it's crazy.
I mean, it's creative, but it's like, you know, a Bangladesh turkey head,
penguin toes,
quail eggs from Argentina.
Emu hearts.
Penguin
toes.
Exactly. And you're like, so then you think, well, that, you know, and it's the same thing that we were just talking about like these, I started Atomic Habits, but I didn't finish it. So it's kind of a funny thing. It's like,
I know it's good. If you don't like it, put it down.
But it's good. It's really good. It's really good. One of the cool things I got out of the first couple pages of that book was that they talked about how Christmas Eve is actually a lot of times more exciting than Christmas. And so I play that a lot into my, I pull that lever a lot into my dog training, where I explain to people that the anticipation of something, a dog owner coming home, an off-leash dog, like the anticipation of something a lot of times is actually much more stimulating and exciting, or even creating much more anxiety than the actual thing happening. So that was an interesting thing that I pulled from that book. But what I was trying to say is, like, when you look at people who are working out 7 days a week and meal planning, and you're like, okay, that's what getting into shape is. It's like, no, that's the extreme. What I love about what you guys have done, not only have you made, like, hey, these are, even if you didn't do these particular recipes, you can still go in and go, wow, I didn't know I could give my dog quinoa. I didn't know I could give my dog a bite of my apple. I didn't know I could give my dog potatoes or carrots or the egg noodles that we talked about. Like, I think it's what I love about what you guys have done is you've made it really pretty and fun for the dog owners who have that. But it's also just understanding that, you know, for me, again, like I said, to reiterate that some of the things that I see for raw feeding and other diets, not just raw feeding, it gets overwhelming because these people have been doing it since day one. So your dog's probably not, like, I know when I gave my dog eggshells for the first time, she didn't eat them the first 10 times. She would not, she was like, nope, she wouldn't eat it. But I think you guys kind of touched on this, is just start off slow, right? Like give them, even if you give them a piece of broccoli, they're going to be like, what's this green thing in my brown kibble, right? You know, a cherry tomato or whatever, or dollop of sour cream or yogurt. They're going to be like, because the texture is different from what they're normally used to. So if you put that stuff on their kibble, those are things to be mindful of. So would you say like be consistent to try these things out? Because I know in my experience, my dog put her nose up to a lot of the stuff that she likes now. Are there things that, I know that your dog immediately took the egg, but do you have any advice for people who their dog, like if they wanted to do eggs, everybody can do eggs right now. Give your dog an egg, give your dog a blueberry, give your dog a dollop of Greek yogurt. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you could recommend or give advice to for people who their dogs are really picky?
Yeah, so I guess usually they're picky about vegetables. Like I've seen a lot of dogs who, my childhood dog would eat around like every single like pea and then like spit them out, you know, that kind of thing. We have some veggie-less options in the basic section, a veggie-free option if your dog is picky with vegetables. Yeah, I don't know. I guess just try lots of things and see what they like. And you can also blend things, like how you might trick kids into eating the vegetables, puree it all up with something that they do like and see if they'll eat that.
Yeah, I know a good thing for a lot of dogs, as long as it's not overdone, is like pumpkin. So you could do like a little bit of pumpkin, a little bit of like Greek yogurt for that probiotic, and you know maybe some of the kelp and oyster powders that you guys have been talking about, or sardines. But I know even like for an example, just again for people who are listening, my boys, they're not really picky eaters, but like for an example, they eat sardines. Like they'll just slurp down sardines. Cool. And I know like our friends and even family who come over, they're like, ooh, sardines. I'm like, the funny thing is you've just grown up as an adult to think that that's not good, or to think that that's because my kid is like slurping them down like Twizzlers, like just, you know, and they're good for them. And so it's just interesting, like how dogs and humans have so much alike, where they kind of put what is this? Like my dog seeing snow for the first time, it's like, whoa, what is all this? So it's all really good. I know like for a big part of your book, and I know for humans, like broth is such a big thing. Do you guys have a simple and easy way to make homemade broth, or do you suggest when you go to the store, what type of broth? Because I know when my dog was going through, he was on a lot of antibiotics for stupid reasons, but he needed them to save his life. But I know I had to rebuild his gut. So I wanted to just briefly talk to you guys about broth and gut health. And I gave him a lot of broth. I gave him a lot of pumpkin and probiotics and all that. But like, when I go to the store to get broth for my dog, chicken broth or bone broth or whatever, is there something I should be looking for in particular? Is there good broths or bad broths?
Yeah, most of the broths in the stores are made for people to taste good. So they have onions in them, they've got lots of salt, they have different spices in them. So we usually avoid store-bought broth unless you can find one that's just single ingredient. I know they have bone broths sometimes in the stores that are just meat bones, if you can find those. But broth is actually really easy to make. All you have to do is take a chicken drumstick, put it in a pot of water, and boil it, you know, for 20 minutes, and you have broth. So that's it, or any meat bone, a beef rib.
Yeah, we have a guide to barking good broth in the book. So good your dog will just start barking. But it's based around ratios of water to bones. But I mean, it's really hard to mess up broth. You just, yeah, like Joel's saying, you just throw them in a pot and boil it for, you know, could be 20 minutes, could be 15 hours.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're doing. 20 minutes could be 15 hours.
Yeah.
What are the benefits of what are the benefits for broth for a dog? Do you have any?
It tastes great. And there's also some nutrients in the broth.
Mm-hmm.
There's some proteins and some minerals. Maybe not as nutritious as we once thought it to be. But you know, it's can help the food taste better, and it's kind of
doesn't
like
it pull a lot
source.
Of nutrients that you wouldn't get from the bone marrow?
Boil it long enough, it can.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that takes a long time. So you have to boil, like, to get the extract from the bones, it takes, that's why they call it bone broth. It takes, yeah, you know, hours and hours to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you can get you can extract the marrow, which has some fats and some vitamins and minerals. But yeah, it takes, you know, maybe 8 hours to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a little bit longer to, like, I know, like, I'm a big pho connoisseur, like whenever I travel I try to find like the best pho, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's a Vietnamese soup, and some of the best places that, and I've tried to ask like, what, why is this different, why does this, and they say because they boil their beef broth for you know, overnight or whatever, and it just gives it that rich flavor. Okay, so what about, have you guys done any gut health research, and do you have any advice for people, dog owners who are trying to improve their dog's gut health, or maybe just educate them on how important it is in general?
Yeah, we're not really experts on this space, mm-hmm, but we have read a lot of research on it, and it's really emerging. I think we talked last time about the fact that, you know, there's microbiome tests now. And they're really hyped. So some people think they're the essential thing to do, and then some researchers are a bit more conservative. But it is really early. So some of these bacteria that live in the guts, we can't even isolate them properly. We don't know exactly what they do. But the evidence seems to suggest that fermented foods are as good as, or maybe even better in some respects than probiotics themselves. So the kefirs of the are super good because they got diverse microorganisms. Yogurt really only needs two microorganisms to be considered yogurt. So it's helpful, but it's not great. Not as good as kefir. And it's not just the bacteria, the microorganisms themselves. It's also their metabolites, the things that they make from digesting the sugars and the things in the milk that they put out. And it just all supports the microorganisms in there.
What is, because I get kefir for my dogs, and people, again, cool, people who are listening, all of the stuff that we're talking about is becoming so much more regular in the smaller mom and pop stores in your cities. So if you go to a Petco or PetSmart, they may not have some of the things, but they're getting better about it. They have refrigerators now, which is great. But a lot of the mom and pop, like, we have a place locally here called Benson's, and they have all the things that we're talking about, including uncooked and cooked food, the kefir, the bones, the broths, the goat milks, all that stuff. So do you know, I don't even know what kefir is. I just know it's really good for their gut. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, we launched it temporarily. Kefir is just fermented milk. And differing from yogurt, it has, in addition to bacterium, it has some yeast strains. So it's much more diverse. And, you know, they're even like available like Kroger's and some of the large chains.
Taste-wise, it's just like yogurt. Sorry.
Say again?
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to say, is it good for people as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it tastes just like yogurt. If you like yogurt, you're going to like kefir too.
Sometimes a little stronger, a little funkier.
A little bit, maybe a little tangier.
Depending on the
brand. Yeah.
Yeah.
But a little sour. Yeah. We drink a lot of kefir too.
Yeah, and I also drink kombucha. I think there's one study out of Stanford where they're trying to test in people whether it was fiber that had the best effects for microbiome and gut health. And they found that actually at the last minute they tested fermented foods. I think it's a husband and wife team at Stanford. I forgot their names. But that research actually showed that the fermented foods had the most action in improving gut health compared to just fiber alone. So it really is helpful. And maybe we don't know exactly why just yet. There's some hypotheses, but there's something beneficial about, you know, the metabolites, the organisms themselves, getting in there and mixing it up.
Yeah, that makes sense. And listen, like, you know, I have to preach to you guys, but I think food is medicine in many ways. Have you guys gotten any pushback from anybody, like any colleagues or anybody like along the way? I know that there's online people that are going to say, hey, this frosted layer, beautiful strawberry cake here can't be good for your dog. And you're like, okay. But like, did you get any pushback from any veterinarians or specialists or nutritionists along the way? Or did you, or is it kind of like uncharted territory for this, you know, this cookbook?
See, it's the thing is, right? Even for people, right?
Did I open a can of worms?
Yeah, it's cool. That's what you do, right? Yeah, you did.
Whenever somebody says the thing is, I'm like,
all the vets we've spoken to, they have all got different, you know, they all have their own opinions of what the best diet is for dogs, and that's what it's like for people too, right? It's like there's no one consensus.
You can thrive on carnivore. Yeah. You can thrive on a vegan diet, and dogs can basically too. If you do it smartly, dogs can eat vegan, they can eat raw, they can eat carnivore. And it's because we all evolved in very nutrient poor environments. We had to just get whatever we could eat to survive. Dogs and people are the same. They're a little bit more towards the carnivorous side than we are, and we're a little bit more omnivorous. But that's why we bonded 10,000, 20,000 years ago, is because we shared similar kind of food preferences. And that's also the biggest challenge. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is dogs can live on kibble and a carbohydrate heavy diet just fine. Just like people can live on vegan diets. Yeah. And you can actually live reasonably long, especially if you're not overfed on kibble. But once you start overfeeding, then a lot of things transpire, like you were mentioning, the boosts in glucose and diabetes that lead to cancer and all those things. But yeah, that's the thing, is that dogs and people can just thrive on anything. So with that backdrop, if you want to get beyond just survival and you want them to thrive, right? Mm-hmm. You want to give them the optimal things, then that comes into play. And so we built this book around looking at all the research to try to find what was actually optimal. What does the research say is optimal for dogs? And then we reflected that in our book to the best of our ability.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Because that's got to be difficult, because you're basically going against the grain, and you know, you're breaking down walls and doing some cool stuff. What do you feed? Obviously you guys aren't making spaghetti and meatballs, you know, every day for your dog. What's your dog's diets like on a regular?
We make a lot of stews for them. So we also like to keep it simple. You know, when we're not filming content, we will just throw ground beef, veggies, you know, a couple of the kelp powder, some eggshell, some oysters into a pot, some quinoa, and just cook it up in like 15, 20 minutes. So they eat a lot of stews.
What's your veggie go-to?
We do, we like convenience. So we do lots of frozen pre-chopped veggies, like green beans, peas and carrots, chopped broccoli, and that kind of stuff. You just keep in the freezer and then throw it in the pot directly. There's not even washing or chopping involved.
Just get right after it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about the time it takes. Like, it literally takes you less than 10 minutes to make a big pot of stew for your dog. And then the reason why we cook versus feeding raw, two reasons is first, you know, the raw can have pathogens that not are only tough for dogs, but can get transferred to humans. So you got to be careful about the kill step. So that makes it a little bit more complicated. And then the second is that cooking can actually make some of the things more nutrient, more absorbable. So the proteins denature, and most importantly, it's easy. You just throw it in there. You don't even have to think about, you know, getting all these different things. A little bit of this, just leave it on the stove and it's done. It can stay in the refrigerator for, you know, 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
So it's all about simplicity for us, making it really
easy. Well, we wanted it to be practical for, you know, people, the modern person, you know, kudos to all the people who feed their dogs, you know, like the elaborate raw meals you were talking about. Like, that's a lot of effort to balance and to find all those ingredients. But the average person can't, or probably doesn't want to handle that raw food. So cooking is the most simple way to give your dog nutritious meals.
It's like veganism for people, you know. It's kudos if you can do it, but yeah, it's so hard for the average person to do it right, because you're missing so many things in the vegan diet, and you can't do it, obviously, but you need to supplement. You need to make sure you're getting your zinc, your copper, your vitamin B12, which makes it hard. And so we're all about making it really easy. And like you mentioned, some of these elaborate recipes, it's designed to scale with people. As you get more into cooking even, and you want to practice your culinary skills, well, dogs are perfect for that, because they never complain. Like, you make something for your family and it's not good, you're going to hear it. But the dogs are like, they would love everything.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's great. It's great. I think, like I said, I'm, you know, anytime I can learn more about dogs and more beneficial thing about dogs, I am so passionate about. And I think what you guys have done is really incredible. So
yeah, thank you. That means a lot. You know, you're such a pro at what you do. Not just the training, but also this podcast is a huge gift. I think people don't realize how much work this stuff actually is. And they think, oh, it's part of our jobs to do that. And in a way it is, but it's really also a gift. We want to help educate people, because we were so lost when we started. And that drive to make sure that we weren't hurting our dogs, or, you know, or recommending things to people that could hurt them, really drove us to go deeper. But yeah, it's not easy. So kudos to you for doing this and having us on. Really appreciate the efforts.
Thank you.
Really appreciate the efforts.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And that's it. Is the things that I've learned off of podcasts have changed my life, my family's life, my kids' life, my wife's life, my client's life forever. I mean, the little things that I've learned from the people that I listen to, whether it's Andrew Huberman or a silly girly podcast that my wife listens to on skincare. It's like, oh, I didn't know that. And it's like, you got to understand, these people have worked on this for 10 years every day, and they talk to somebody for an hour and a half and taught me more. They kind of give you the cliff notes on, hey, here's the things I've been doing for the last 10 years that'll make your life better. And it's like, so I love this podcast for that reason, because it's certainly taken a change in its direction. This podcast used to be only dog training and behavior, where it was just interviewing dog trainers and recording my online consults with my clients. Now it's 50-50. Now it's having people on like you guys, because I've realized that there's a huge gap in the world of, and exactly, I don't get paid for this, obviously. This is something that I genuinely like to do. And I don't dive into anything. I say no to a lot of stuff nowadays that just doesn't get me excited. And this type of stuff, like, I'm excited for this to go out to as many people as it possibly can over the years. And hopefully, you know, on your next book or your next adventure, we can certainly you know, do something again. But yeah, but thank you guys for hopping on. Obviously, before we take off, I want you guys to plug the book. Where can people get it? When can they get it? Where can people find you on social media to see all the fun? And because that's kind of where it started for you guys, right? You posted a recipe on pancakes and your dog, and then it was like, once you get a bunch of people talking how bad things are, you might be like, oh, maybe I'm onto something here. So why don't you just plug where people can find you, and where can people find The Dog's Table once it's released?
Yeah, you can find The Dog's Table at dogstable.com, and it should be where all books are sold. You can find it in stores. You can follow us at The Sed Life on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook.
And I'll put all that in the show notes as well. So people who are driving or running or doing all the things that I typically do when I listen to podcasts, I'll put everything in the show notes so you guys can click later. The link for the book and obviously all their socials as well. So thank you guys again for coming on.
Yeah.
This was
thank you again.
You're welcome. This was incredible. And I wish you guys the best of luck. And I'm genuinely saying this. I'm excited. I can just tell by your energy and I can tell what you guys are doing. I'm very excited to see what you guys do in this space because I think that this is only the beginning for you guys because this is going to be cool. I'm excited to see what you guys can do. So thank you for coming on and thank you everybody for listening.
Just one last plug. If you can put the our website, preciouscreatures.co on the show notes as well. You know, we recommend everybody can get their goods from the store, but in the event that they want convenience, we have some of the powders available in a trio and a set that they can just order if they're interested, just out of the convenience. But yeah, we wanted to make the book stand alone mm-hmm. and not depend on anything too. But again, really appreciate your efforts and your work doing all this stuff. You know, it's a labor of love, I'm sure. So we appreciate you and the world appreciates you, I'm sure.
Thank you guys. Thanks everybody for listening.